Track 5, Paul Henderson talks to Richard Matthew, a retired head teacher who went to serve in voluntary service overseas in Pakistan.
Hello, and this is Paul Henderson, and I'm here talking with Richard Matthew. Richard was an English teacher and eventually headmaster in England, but then took early retirement. And I wonder, Richard, if you could just tell us a little bit about what happened in your early retirement.
Yeah, well, I took early retirement when I was a head and I was teaching in Suffolk. And my wife, Sue, had always been quite keen to do VSO, voluntary service overseas. So a part of my retirement package, I got funding to do a master's degree at UEA in Norwich in teaching English as a foreign language. And so we decided to apply to VSO, and we were both accepted to go to Pakistan.
And you were going to do some work within education, and your wife was going to do work in medicine, was that right?
Well, training nurses, community nursing, yes. Yeah, she'd been a nurse and a health visitor, latterly, and so she got a job with VSO training community nurses. Yes, I definitely wanted to do something in the sort of teacher training field, and I was appointed as an English language advisor.
And obviously your TEFL, the Teaching English as a Foreign Language qualification, really helped with that.
It did, really. It was more than I expected, because it was quite theoretical. But it was gave me a good, I'd got the practical experience, you know, in the classroom for over many years of teaching. And it gave me a very good theoretical background, which I needed to get this, we'll say more about that probably, this programme that I was working on in Pakistan.
And you were in Karachi?
Yep.
And you had responsibility for training teachers or training other trainers of teachers?
Both, yes, actually, yeah. I was in Karachi. I was working for the Aga Khan Education Service, which had a small network of schools. And they'd set up, with special funding they got from EU and UK and so on, a thing called the English Language Unit. And I was the English Language Advisor. I wasn't the head of the unit, I was sort of number two. The head was local. And then there was a team, a small team, half a dozen of local teachers, Pakistani teachers, mostly women, in fact all women except one. And I was the only European. And my job was to train, as you say, train teachers in the classroom, all classroom-based, though we had workshops at the weekends, but most of the work was actually in the classroom with the teacher on the job training. And also, though, to train these young master trainers, as they were called, working in this unit with me, to train them to train the teachers. So it was a sort of dual role, quite complicated.
And how did you cope with the language?
Well, the thing about Pakistan, as I believe is the case in India, because it's an ex-British colony or part of the empire, whatever, virtually everybody speaks some English, and a lot of people speak quite good English. We were taught Urdu. We had 2 or 3 months training in Islamabad, the capital, before we went, to our postings. And a part of that training was language training in Urdu, the local language. But my Urdu virtually was always worse than anybody else's English. So we always ended up speaking English most of the time.
And where did you live?
Yeah, we had a flat in Karachi that was provided by the employer, the Aga Khan Education Service. And we had a local salary, local wage. The flat was ground floor of a family house where he was a businessman and his two wife and two daughters who lived above. It was about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes from my work base in Karachi.
And what was your impression of the schools that you worked with and around?
The schools, I would say, the government schools were very poor, very sort of third world. Very poorly equipped and very, 50 in a class and so on, and really struggling, they weren't well funded. My schools, the Aga Khan schools, were not fully blown private schools, as you might imagine, more like international schools, which you find in quite around the world. They were sort of halfway house. They were better funded. The campuses were better and bigger. They were more secure. And they were more forward-looking, quite enterprising, and quite ambitious for their kids, yeah.
How did the Pakistani teachers respond to you? And were there any problems with across cultures?
Yeah, well, I think generally they responded extremely well, you know, because here was I just been flown in, as it were, and they didn't know me from Adam. They knew I didn't know anything about their culture or their country and very little about their language. But they were, in fact, sometimes embarrassingly, you know best, tell us how to do it. And I had, part of my role was to say, well, actually, you've got a lot of skills already, you know. It's just a matter of applying those skills with the right materials, etc., to improve your teaching. Mm. Generally, they were very, very hospitable, very welcoming. And nearly all women, mostly, the women, I have to say, were easier to work with than the few male teachers that were. I think they were a little bit more cautious about, you know, maybe they felt a bit threatened, I don't know. But the women teachers were lovely and very easy to work with, yeah.
What about the administrators?
The administrator, if by that you mean the heads of the various schools, nearly all women again, except one, and nearly all very powerful, what I would call powerful women, and you didn't want to cross them. And I saw them exercising their power with some of their staff, particularly their male staff, in no uncertain fashion. So the idea of sort of people have of submissive Islamic Muslim women is a bit mistaken. Mm-hmm. No, these were pretty powerful, slightly sometimes a little bit erratic, a little bit wayward, but they knew what they wanted. Yeah.
Did they intrude on your role at all?
Occasionally, only in the sense, no, they gave me a very free hand. That was very good, and I could select the teachers I wanted to work with. I planned my activities. I had a completely free hand. The only thing was occasionally was you would set up a visit, you know, with some teachers, and it all in the diary. And I would always make sure to brief the head what I was going to do, which day I was coming, and yeah, fine, yeah, no, yes, lovely to see you. And you'd get there, and either you'd be offered a cup of tea. You couldn't refuse it because that's part of local hospitality. And this would often go on for an hour or two, so it impinge on your programme. Or occasionally you would find the whole day had suddenly become a sports day and all the normal lessons were cancelled. So you couldn't do your training in the classroom. Mm. So it was just a local cultural thing, really. You know, everything were often very last minute, you know. Yeah,
and Pakistan as a whole, were you able to visit other parts of Pakistan?
Yes, we were from time to time. We had two or three holidays. We went up to the north of the Swat Valley, which is very beautiful. We'd started in Islamabad. We had two or three months in Islamabad, so we got to know that area in the north, which is the capital city. Yeah, in the north. Yeah, and we went to Lahore for a weekend. Our son, all three of our children came out to visit us. Various times we went to Lahore with our son. We went to Quetta in Balochistan, and one or two other, and conferences, VSO conferences in the north. Yeah, so we saw a bit of Pakistan. Yeah,
and Pakistan has a reputation for being politically a little bit unstable, or quite difficult.
Yeah,
and I notice at the moment the Foreign Office say don't go to Pakistan.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel
This is always in the background, and of course about 50% of the time since independence in 1947 the military have controlled the government. Almost regularly every few years there's a military coup. They take over, then they hand back power to the civilians, and then they take over again, you know. So in the background there was that kind of instability, but only one occasion did it ever impinge on us when we had a trip to the north cancelled because there'd been an outbreak of fighting in the far north. But otherwise, in Karachi or elsewhere, it didn't have a direct impact on us.
And Pakistan is an Islamic country.
Yeah, entirely.
How did you find that? I mean, was that an interesting experience?
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And of course, it's not just Islamic. It was set up specifically as an Islamic country, which is why the partition in 1947 had been part of India, of course, until 1947. And then partition was created precisely to create a homeland for Muslims. Over 120 million or something. It was very interesting living in a Muslim country, and I learned quite a lot about Islam. I learned about the hospitality, the culture, and so on. And the other thing is, as in Christianity, there are lots of different facets of Islam, lots of different sects, as it were, rather like different churches. So you can't really generalise about Islam. That's another thing I learned. But I found it very interesting, yeah.
Did you find the people of Pakistan generally very welcome?
Oh, yeah, extremely, extremely. Very hospitable, sometimes embarrassingly so. Mm. And we were invited to several local families for meals and things. And generally, people are very friendly. If anything, you feel a bit favoured because they're, the ordinary people are very sort of pro-British, I think, because they have a sort of understanding. They've got family often in England and so on. No, I found them very friendly and hospitable, yeah.
How did you cope with the heat?
Ah, well, yes, the heat. Yes, could go up to 40 degrees, but the worst thing was not the heat so much as the humidity, which could go up to 90% humidity. And working through that, especially in the summer months, which you had to do, was difficult. We had air conditioning in our flat, but we didn't use it too much because the problem is when you turn it off, and the heat, the contrast is too great. So we tried not to use it very much. So, yeah, you just had to struggle sometimes a bit with the heat, yeah.
Okay, so you were there for 2 years.
Yeah.
And would you reflect that it had been a really positive experience for you and for the people you met and worked with?
Yes, generally very positive for us. There were difficulties. The heat is one I've mentioned. Sometimes the erratic nature of the arrangements and travelling wasn't always easy. But just being in that culture in 2 years, working alongside Muslims, and I was the only non-Muslim, only non-European, the only European rather, was valuable, enormously valuable in itself, getting to know that culture.
And would you reflect that perhaps this is the type of thing should happen more, that other people would do the same thing?
I'd certainly recommend it, especially if you're early retired or retired, because this kind of, if you mean the VSO type of thing, because VSO now is all about using mature people who've got professional skills, and it's all about skills transfer, not dishing out money to people. Mm-hmm. Well, the important mm-hmm. thing is to build the capacity and the skills in these countries so they can then help themselves. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, to answer the other part of your question, hopefully I'd achieve some of that, but of course, you don't know. I'd have to go back and ask them. They probably wouldn't give me an honest reply anyway.
You haven't been back.
No, I haven't been back. No, we didn't want to go back as tourists somehow. I'd only like to go back to work there, and that wasn't really practical. Yeah, but I strongly recommend doing something like this at some point in your life. And in a sense, I think almost everybody should do something a bit different. Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much, Richard. That's been really, really interesting, and I'm sure you've got plenty more stories you could tell.
Yeah.
But thank you very much today.
Okay, nice to talk to you.